The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 503. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this episode of the PVD Cast. Now, we're doing things a little differently for this installment. My guest, well, to be honest with you, he's more than a guest. He's my tag team partner when it comes to the State of Pro Wrestling, which is a fantastic show that we do once a month through his podcast, The Pop Culture Cosmos. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Gerald Glassford. Now, Gerald and I came up with a kind of a different concept for this episode. We're not going to talk about, like we normally do, the current news of professional wrestling. Instead, we took a topic, like the best managers and valets in wrestling. And that's what we decided, that we would compile a list and chat about those selections on an episode. So that's the second half of this episode that you're going to hear. The first half is something that I kind of wanted to do, and Gerald was absolutely A-okay with it, and that is to talk about some of the weird and wild stuff that has happened to me that I have witnessed in the time that I've spent in the independent pro wrestling circles here in Ohio. So one of those stories involves myself and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and then the other story that I have involves a independent wrestler by the name of Jason Thunder, and how he decided to pull a fast one on me during a show. So two fantastic stories, two fun stories that I hope you'll like. And with that, I'm not going to waste any more time because it's a longer episode. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Gerald Glassford about the best managers and valets in history. And you're going to hear two wild tales from yours truly right here on the PVD Cast.
Ding, ding, ding. And we're back for a special episode of the State of Pro Wrestling. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here, along with my good friend, my tag team partner, indeed. He is the world champion of indie stories, and he's going to share some of them today. It is Mr. John Orlando from the PVD Cast and Matt Talk. What's going on, John?
Not much. Thanks for having me back on to talk about some interesting stories from the road. I don't have too many, but I have a few that are pretty laughable, if you will. And today I'm going to share probably my favorite and the greatest story from my career. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it as well. But I think the word 2025 word sicko comes into mind when it comes to wrestling aficionados. So you got to be a wrestling sicko to go ahead and probably catch this show indeed. But if you are, I am truly indebted to you for doing so. But speaking of wrestling sickos, real quick, John, I've bothered you on Facebook with the DMs to share my possible sickness, because I might be a wrestling sicko, because two instances this week happened. And I'm hearing the return of Dancing, when this is being recorded, the Dancing with the Stars on. And I'm hearing Alfonso Ribeiro, I believe it is. He's hosting the show and he's talking, whatnot. But I don't see who was on. So I'm walking in a room and I could swear to you he sounded exactly like Todd Pettengill going back from the WWF in the 90s. I swear to you, it sounded to me just like that. And I was like, I did a double take. I was like, well, what? Is that Todd Pettigrew hosting Dancing with the Stars? Oh, no, it's Alfonso Ribeiro. And on top of that, my friend, I've taken my wife to work, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm half asleep. I take her to work. I'm on the way home. I'm turning on something on. So I'm turning on the latest interview at this time from Chris Van Vliet, who is one of the premier wrestling interviewers out there. Credit to him and his success. He has really done a great job with what he's done. You know, doesn't get always everything right, as I'll tell you in a second, but he's interviewing a longtime referee, Charles Robinson, who we all know from WWF, WCW fame and all that. And some of the first words that he's talking about to him, he's telling him, you're the longest tenured referee as far as refereeing in four different decades. And I'm driving along and I'm half asleep again. And just, this is how much of a sicko I may be, John. Instantly, within seconds, I dropped Chris Tiger Hattori holding his beer. He would say to Charles Robinson, hold my beer. Tiger Hattori, and you look it up. Tiger Hattori, I believe, refereed in 4 or 5 decades, I believe, as well. So 5 decades, I think, as a matter of fact. So, yeah. The fact that I knew that at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's scary, John.
I see nothing wrong with either of these stories, by the way. I'm just going to go on record. I see nothing wrong whatsoever.
How would I remember at 6 o'clock in the morning a longtime referee for in Japan? How? Why?
You have it stored somewhere in your brain, and at that moment, it just clicked. Neurons fired and energy pulsated through your head, and there you go. That's how you came up with it.
It's crazy, man. But we're here to talk about your stories instead. But I am, I guess, a wrestling sicko, to say the least. But John, you are not a wrestling sicko. You are someone who has experienced life both as a fan and as someone who has participated behind the scenes at an independent level. So you've got some stories you wanted to share on the front half, and then we would go into our thoughts on the second half on who we think the best managers and valets are that have really made a presence over the course of time in professional wrestling. So without further ado, you've got some stories to tell everyone out there. So I will turn it over to you, my friend.
Okay. Well, just to give a little background, I started in 2002 doing ring announcing for a company in Columbus, Ohio. It was called Fire and Ice Wrestling. When that company went under, there was another company called the PWC, the Pro Wrestling Coalition, that I was part of. And then where I spent a lot of my career was with Ohio Championship Wrestling, OCW, which is still in existence today. It has different owners. The owner that I worked with was a gentleman by the name of Big Guns Jeff Cannon. He ran the company for 16 years. And I was along for the whole entire ride there. And I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to help book several years in a row with Jeff. And I really appreciated that. So just to give you a little bit of background here. So one day, it was probably, I'd say, 2005 through 2007. It's one of those years. Mm-hmm. We had been consistently running a auction center out in a very small little town in kind of central, but a little bit towards the east, I'd say east central Ohio. It was a little town called Stralsburg, Ohio. Now, the guys, including yours truly, did not really dig when we had a show there because it was a very long drive because it was a lot of two-lane back roads. And so it was kind of, if you will, like of the Mid-South territory. There was a lot of two-lane back roads. It took about 2.5 hours. There wasn't much scenery. It was out in the hills of eastern Ohio. There wasn't a lot of scenery, so it was kind of a boring ride. You better have your CDs with you because there wasn't a radio out there, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a kind of a crappy drive to go out there. But In the summertime, we loved going there because it was the only venue that we ran that was air conditioned, which ought to tell you how long ago this story takes place. So it's this auction center. They had a venue at the in the front of the building where the wrestling took place, and in the back was like where they stored everything that they had going up for auction. So that's where we would change and, you know, run down the matches and all that jazz. All the administrative stuff was held in the back part of the auction center. So about a couple of weeks after we announced that we're coming and we're bringing Hacksaw Jim Duggan, all right, WWE legend Hacksaw Jim Duggan's coming. So is TNA standout Sharkboy is going to be there. So it's a packed show. And we always drew well in Strasbourg, even if we didn't have a name on the show. But we had used Hacksaw before, so no big deal. We knew he would draw. So a couple of weeks after the announcement, Jeff calls me and says, hey, we got a problem. I said, what's that? He said, Hacksaw would really like to have his match be right before intermission so he could sell his stuff. His merchandise and that. Yeah, right. Of course. He goes, but I don't know. I don't just want to have the match. I'm like, okay, well, let's think about this. All right. Like, give me a little bit of time to think about it. And I kind of forgot an integral part. We had booked Hacksaw against a gentleman from West Virginia whose name was Mr. 8x10 Michael Cruz. We had not used him before, or if we had, we'd used him one other time. But he was a solid hand, not a problem. A very, very gorgeous Jimmy Garvin type of gimmick. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know, he'll do good against Hacksaw. So maybe the next day or maybe 2 days later, I called Jeff. I'm like, I got an idea. He says, what's that? I said, here's how we get Hacksaw to intermission, get his match towards intermission time. How about I don't mention in the rundown at the beginning of the show, I do not mention Michael Cruz is here. Like, I'll name everybody else that's got matches. I won't mention him. So I'll go out. It's intermission time. Folks, grab a drink, grab some food, grab some merchandise, blah, blah, blah. And Mr. 8x10 can interrupt me. He'll come to the ring. He'll be, how dare you disrespect me, blah, 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 blah. And I will play dumb. I'll be like, I didn't know you were even here, man. You know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean, no, you disrespected me. How dare you, you punk? And okay. And eventually he'll grab me by the lapels of the suit and take me to the corner and be like, I ought to knock your block off. I ought to just give you one of these. And then Jeff Hacksaw can come and make the save. Oh, hey, tough guy. You want to put your hands on my friend, John? You better deal with me. We can have the match, boom, boom, boom. Hacksaw can go right over to the merch table and sell his wares. Jeff says, well, let me check in with Hacksaw, but I think that should work. So Jeff calls me back. He loved it. He loves the idea. He goes, so you're cool with it. I said, I'm absolutely cool with it. Not a problem. Okay, cool. So day comes for the show, and we go over things with Hacksaw. Shows up. We're like, Hacksaw, Jeff and I, we'd like to do this, do this, do this, do this. Okay, cool. All right. Now, one thing I'm going to just take a little side detour for a moment, if I may. Uh-huh. One thing I did not know about Hacksaw was that you have to buy the 2x4. Which I guess makes sense because you can't get on a plane with a 2x4. I don't think they'd let you do that in 2005 or 6 or 7, you know. But yeah, you have to buy him the 2x4. So I just found that to be kind of a little bit mind-blowing. But so back to the story. Hacksaw's fine with everything. He's okay, no problem. Cool. So show starts. Everything's going right along. Everything's clicking right along. Matches are going by. Here it's
– I kind of seem thinking about it. You can't take those things through airports, can you?
No, you can't. You can't. And you know what? There's another piece of equipment here that we're going to talk about that at least
Watch out.
Yeah, well, at least this one, it was in a car. It didn't have to fly. Okay. So the piece of equipment I'm referring to is Mr. 8x10, Michael Cruz. Part of his gimmick was he had a giant, like I have over here or even behind me at the Deadpool, like he has a gigantic picture of himself. All right. Okay. Goes with the gimmick because he's so handsome and pretty and whatnot, et cetera, et cetera. So everything's fine. Everything's great. So it comes time for intermission. I go into the ring and I do my whole spiel. Hey, folks, we're going to go to intermission here. And all of a sudden, here comes Michael Cruz. And he's got his poster framed, slides out in the ring, gets in the ring. Hey, how dare you? Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were here. How dare you? I oughta punch you right in the mouth. Okay, there's no need for that. Grabs me by the lapels, takes me to the corner, rears back. And then you hear, ho! Hacksaw comes out through the curtain. Crazy thing he does, number one, is he literally like takes the 2x4 off of his shoulder. And the only way I can describe it is, have you ever seen like those Highlander games where they have the pole and they throw the pole like yes. this and it goes end yeah. over end? He does that with the 2x4. And I'm like, what do I do? Because I'm trying to figure out where it's going to land. And I go this way and I'm like, no, this way. And it's coming like this. And I'm like, and meanwhile, Michael Cruz just bolts. He leaves. He leaves because he doesn't know where it's going to land. So it lands like 3/4 of the way into the ring. And it bounces and it lands. And so Hacksaw gets in the ring. He gives the ho to the different ring, you know, sides of the ring. And then he grabs the 2x4 and he says to me, and this is an insane thing number two that he does. He looks at me and he says, grab that pitcher. And like a good employee does, he follows what is supposed to be happening. And I grab the poster. Only when I grab it, I realize, Gerald, this son of a gun's pretty heavy. And then it dawns on me, oh no. No. Hacksaw rears back with the 2x4 and swings and hits that poster so hard because he's a large gentleman. Even in his, you know, older years, he's still a massive man. He hits that poster so hard, it flies out of my hands and glass shatters everywhere. And as I was thinking about this, I kind of forgot a small detail, is as I'm holding it and I realize it's heavy, I realize it's glass. I'm like, oh no, he's going to hit this with a 2x4. And I don't want to get, like, all I could picture in the few seconds I had was like glass just cutting through, you know, like just cutting me like I'm in a death match, you know? And so I kind of went this way while I'm holding it. So that's another reason why I wasn't real stable in my hands, because I'm like trying to angle my eyes and face away from this glass. But he hits it so hard. And the shards of glass go all over the ringside area. And it's like the needle on the record. Hacksaw's standing there dumbfounded. And I'm there dumbfounded. And like people at ringside are like, shaking their shirts and getting glass off of them. And he stops and he grabs the microphone from me and he's like, hey folks, I'm sorry, I guess things got out of control and all this. It totally like just destroys the whole vibe, you know, because how do you recover from that? Like, so they end up, we take a couple minutes to sweep out the ring. Michael Cruz is still at ringside and he is mad because that poster got destroyed and wasn't supposed to even be touched in everything that we had talked about. Yeah. Swipe, clean everything up. They have the match, and the match was not, I can remember, was not very good. Probably because of what happened. I'm sure that messed with the mind of Michael Cruz. But yeah, so it was something. Two small footnotes. Go to the back, because we do go to intermission. Hacksaw goes to his merch table and everything goes there. Go in the back. I'm still dumbfounded. Jeff meets me halfway in the gorilla and it's like, what was that? I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just mad that I'm just glad that I didn't get caught up with Glass. And Hacksaw ends up coming back after merch. And I did not hear this. This comes secondhand, but it comes from my good friend, Adam, who was a referee with Ohio Championship Wrestling. He said that Hacksaw came back and was just complaining about who brings Glass to the ring. My buddy Adam I just so wanted to go, who's the guy that didn't check to make sure it wasn't Glass? So that is the night that I like to claim that Hacksaw Jim Duggan damn near killed me. That's and I do want to throw out another footnote. Unfortunately, there was another wrestler who was not real pleased with Hacksaw, and that was Shark Boy, because his kids were sitting front row and got glass shattered all over them, and he was very upset about it. He was kind of perturbed about that, and I don't think anything came of it, but he was not happy. He was not a happy camper for that.
So I don't think I'll be seeing that when I scroll by Facebook and see the official Hacksaw Duggan page, because he likes to put up matches from the past. I don't think I'll be catching that one, will I?
Probably not, because as I said, it wasn't a very good match. And also, too, I think that the awkwardness of the whole glass breaking, not Stone Cold Steve Austin glass breaking, but the Hacksaw Jim Duggan glass breaking. So, I mean, look, I've seen Hacksaw before. We used him before, excuse me, and I've seen him afterwards. And no, you know, I'm not trying to bury the guy by all means. He was always a delight to work with. As I said, worked with him before and worked with him after in OCW. Always a very nice fellow, but it was just one of those wacky instances that can only happen in indie wrestling.
I know you got a little bit more for us here. And once again, it is John Orlando along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching. Stories from the Road with John Orlando, how he almost got killed by Hacksaw Duggan is the first story on play. But I know you've got a little bit more tidbits to share before we get into the best managers and valets, in our opinion.
Yeah, I have another story. It's a shorter story, so that's why I figured it would be a good one to share today. So as I mentioned, I had the option to be the booker for a while, or the assistant booker, if you will, with OCW. And so did my friend Adam, who was a referee. And a lot of times we would just pitch ideas to Jeff, and he would pick the ones that he liked. And so one of the things that I learned, it was a valuable lesson, is to make sure that you are suggesting, not telling, because some guys take, hey, we'd like you to do this, do that, do this. Some guys take that as, well, you're telling me how to do my job. No. That's not the case. That's not the case at all. This is just us suggesting what we would like. And I learned that. But one night in a small town called Rittman, Ohio, which is up near Akron, that suggestion that I had made in jest played out in reality in front of a crowd. So there was a group of gentlemen who were fantastic wrestlers. They were Virus, Unknown, and Jason Thunder. They were three guys that kind of traveled together. They were very good luchador type wrestlers. They were awesome. Got to know them very, very well. And so one night in Rittman, we had this new guy that was making a debut. And I'm going to be honest, his first name was Johnny, and I can't remember what his last name was. I want to say his last name was like Johnny Turbo or something like that. He's taking on Jason Thunder. And, again, we don't know much about the guy, but he seemed like he was on the up and up. So Jason Thunder comes to me and says, hey man, what do you want for the finish? What I want in the finish is this, is I want you to take your opponent, I want you to tie him to railroad tracks. I want you to stand with your foot on his chest, and I want you to twirl that beloved handlebar mustache of yours. That's what I'd like you to do. And we have a great joke. We have a joke. We laugh. You know, it's funny. Okay, whatever. So midway through the show, It's time for Johnny. And again, I apologize. I don't remember. We only used him once. And I feel bad that I don't remember his name, but we'll call him Johnny just for simplicity. Johnny and Jason are up. So, all right. Johnny comes out. I ring announce him in. Here comes Jason Thunder. Give him his announcement, which, again, he had the handlebar mustache and kind of this kind of a pea coat, if you will. That was part of his wardrobe. So gets in the ring, and I leave and go to ringside, and they go back and forth for a little bit of time. And then Johnny gets thrown out to the floor. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so Jason Thunder comes out on the floor, and he looks at me, and he goes, and he just points and smiles. So he grabs Johnny. He takes him to the ring barricade. He then goes underneath the ring, and he pulls out a length of rope, maybe about 2 or 3 feet, you know, 2 or 3 feet in length. I don't know what it was there for. I don't know if he looked before we did the whole joke in the back or whatnot. He takes that rope, Gerald, and ties him to the barricade, and then decides to smile again at me and point, and then run the other three sides of the ring while going choo 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 choo, and then mafia kicks this guy, this Johnny, right in the face. And then as he crumples, he stands. And again, like, we're not that far. My announce table is not that far from where he is. He stands with a foot on his chest and twirls his handlebar mustache. I was like,
oh, my gosh.
And so there lies another wacky wild tale from the Indies for me.
Only in the Indies, right there for you. But it is, of course, John Orlando. John, I'm hoping at some point in time you have more stories that you can share with us down the road. If that's the case, maybe.
Yeah, I do. You know, we did this a few episodes ago where I talked about one of my interactions with Buff Bagwell, where I was a manager and just was totally in. And I urge folks that if you liked what you heard to go back a couple of episodes. I shared a story where the first time ever being a manager, I got thrown into the main event with Buff Bagwell. I was managing somebody against Buff Bagwell, and I was a nervous wreck. That was probably the only time in my career where I was completely like, what the kids call it, crashing out, I think they do. I was crashing out because as we'll talk about it here in a few minutes, as a manager, you got to know when to be that obnoxious person and when to dial back, when to get the heat, when to not have the heat. Like, you got to know all that stuff. And this is the first time I was ever doing it. And I thank Buff for giving me the most simple thing to do. And so it worked. It went splendidly. It went swimmingly. But I was really, really sweating bullets when I arrived at the venue and I saw that on the format, and I'm like, whoa, I'm not ready for this. This is not what I signed up for. But turned out to be a good experience, though. So
did you have to do a bump?
I did not have to take a bump. I did not. So it was just the simple grab the foot. He swings at me. I jump back. The opponent runs with the double axe handle, slip underneath, he misses. And then I think either a body slam or something, and then it led to the blockbuster. So it was simple. Okay. Even I could do it.
Well, credit goes to Marcus Buff Bagwell. If you guys haven't heard in recent weeks, months actually, when this might play, he did have one of his legs amputated. Mm-hmm. To help, because he had such chronic pain. So if you want to go ahead and support him on his YouTube channel, Marcus Buff Bagwell, I'm sure he would really appreciate it. So give him a shout out as well. So yeah, absolutely. You know, I know that a lot of people like to overlook things that happen on the Indies. I know that Jim Cornette primarily trashes the Indies a lot, but in a lot of cases, these are where a lot of individuals get their start, and B, where a lot of individuals who will not go far in the industry have a chance to taste professional wrestling. So indie wrestling does serve its purpose.
Hey, my first show that I worked, I take that back, my second show that I worked with a young Alex Shelley. Uh-huh. I didn't know that dude. And then, you know, a year later, he's on TNA. You know, so you never know who is going to rise out of the indies to become the next big superstar. And that's why when you listen to the State of Pro Wrestling, I'm always an advocate for indie wrestling, because it gives those talented guys and gals a place to work, a place to ply their trade, a place to move up. And, you know, it's super important. So, in fact, I know where this, I don't know when this is airing, but I'm going to an indie show here in about 3 hours. Not because I'm booked, just because I want to go. You know, I bought a ticket and I want to go and see what this promotion has to offer. And I kind of know some of the guys on the show, so I think it's going to be a heck of a show. But definitely, definitely check out indie wrestling, folks.
Absolutely. And if you can, like I said, support indie wrestling. Yes, there are some crazier things that have happened, as we've seen in recent weeks and months. The Raha Jackson incident, I think, is probably paramount. A recent GCW wrestling where they just did a spot where they went through a glass, huge glass pane and into a net. I think also got chided on the industry as well. But again, you do see some crazier things from time to time. But you also, like you said, see people who are just doing it for the love of it and also doing it for the fact that they may be tomorrow's stars. So if you get a chance, support indie wrestling when you can. And again, just be patient with them. They're not the stars of today, but they may be the stars of tomorrow. And we'll look at it like that. But once again, it is the State of Pro Wrestling. It is John Orlando, our own indie man indeed. Maybe Jim Cornette might just whack him upside the head with a tennis racket for being an indie-related individual, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching this. And truly support what you can with the PVD cast, and also Matt Talk for John, and also the Pop Culture Cosmos for me. But this last half hour we would dedicate right now to our thoughts. And if you guys want to in the chat, please share us your thoughts on the best managers and valets. For me, the valets might be a conversation a little bit tough that might not be as apparent as some may see it, because a lot of it with valets may be in their determination based off of looks. I'm more about the performance aspect of it. That's just me. But when it comes to managers, for me, I think it's clear cut. And I want to hear your thoughts on this. I have a Mount Rushmore of managers when it comes to right down to it, or a 405 per se. In Bobby Heaton, who I've actually written on this popculturecosmos.wordpress.com, there is an article that he is the greatest manager of all time. I've talked about also as well, of course, Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette. I think you can't do one without the other. They're intertwined. Their careers not only intertwined, but they absolutely have impacted the industry in similar ways. Paul Heyman is still doing that. After which, would you go Sherry Martel? Would you go someone else? I know there's some good suggestions out there, but for me, I think that's my four. Who do you have on as far as your Mount Rushmore for managers?
Pretty much almost identical to yours. Bobby the Brain Heenan, for sure. I mean, look, he was fantastic as a manager. The added bonus that he was a wrestler at one time and could take bumps made him the complete package. Jim Cornette, another fantastic heel manager that definitely got as much heat. And not only that, but I think as...
Still does,
yeah. Yeah. But even as he went on in his career, I think that his wealth of knowledge was clearly showcased every time he came through the curtain, you know, because he knew all about these old finishes that many people forgot about. I think Jim Cornette's literally like the reason why people say he's has more knowledge in his pinky than you would have all over your body, or whatever that saying is. I think he's the epitome of that. Uh-huh. Paul Heyman, absolutely one of the more colorful characters, I guess you could say, in the world of pro wrestling, especially when he was Paul E. Dangerously. But he's still at a high level. My last one, I'm going to say the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. I mean, his...
He was close for me, but I mean, if you want to put Hart in there as a number four, I won't argue with you. I just think Sherry Martel as a manager, you know, gave up. But please, go ahead, elaborate. Jimmy the Mouth of the South, Hart, again, an icon in Memphis for years before he transitioned to the WWE. And as first as a heel manager with the Hart Foundation and several others, and then transitioning over to his behind the scenes friendship with Hulk Hogan into a real life fronting as his manager. I just think it kind of waned off from there, and he didn't do as much, or just was kind of there in a lot of cases. Well, his time with Hulk Hogan, he didn't have to do as much. Less was asked for him as an orator, or as someone who could or needed to take bumps. That was more when he was on the heel end of things. But your thoughts, man, on Jimmy Hart, because he does have a legacy in and of himself.
Yeah, I think everything you said is correct. I think that when he got to WCW and he was with Hogan, that's where things kind of just went, like any wrestler.
It's a good gig if you can get it.
Yeah, I'm not going to hate on him for getting that check.
No bumps. Doesn't have to say much. Just go out there and cheer Hogan on.
Like I said, heel Jimmy Hart, I liked a lot more than babyface Jimmy Hart. But yeah, I think that his work in Memphis was really, really good. I mean, we talk about wrestlers who have been in a territory for a very long time and were very successful, like Jerry Lawler, like Carlos Colon. Jimmy Hart had a very long run in Memphis and still was over every chance that even when he would go away for a couple of months and come back, still had that heat. The people of Memphis just did not like Jimmy Hart. And, you know, and then you look at all the things that, as you said, he did in the back. The fact that he was a member of the Gentries and had that musical background. He could do musical things for wrestlers, you know, vignettes and whatnot. He's done stuff backstage in terms of booking
intro
and whatnot.
Music as well.
Yeah, and intro music as well. Yeah, so I think he's warranted on being on that that Mount Rushmore. Sorry, I don't know why I got tongue tied there, Mount Rushmore.
I just think for me, because you know, I give the slight edge to Sherry Martel is because, you know, what she couldn't, I mean, her promos were just basically screaming a little bit as far as screaming, at the top of her lungs. And obviously Jimmy Hart was a better orator and better speaker, better promo than she was. But what she gave, she couldn't, you know, whatever she did as far as, or whatever you think of her as a promo, she gave much more as far as physical work in the ring. And she, you know, you talk about leaving your body in the ring. She would do that. She would, you know, when she'd interject or she would get, how many times did she get thrown from the ring to her wrestlers down below? You know, how many times did she take bumps? Maybe a little bit even harder than whatever Jimmy Hart did. That's the reason why I just kind of lean towards Sherry. But again, I won't argue with you if you want Jimmy Hart as well.
Well, I look at it this way. For me, I will put Sherry Martel as one of the greatest valets because of all those things you said. She was a valet that was taking bumps that were, I hate to say this, but they were basically more men's bumps. I mean, you know what I mean? Like there wasn't the cat fight type of deal. You know,
and being a former AWA World's Heavy World's Women's Champion, you know, she was obviously very much used to it.
Right, exactly. And I think that I just her work in WCW, I think, was better in terms of promos because she had, you know, like especially when she was with Harlem Heat. Like, I think she really worked well with Harlem Heat and really help make them a viable tag team.
But then again, her work with Macho King, Randy Savage, mm-hmm. Shawn Michaels, I thought was really good as well and effective as well. Just to provide heat, to, you know, as they say in the industry, just to provide crowd dissension, just to get people to really get behind hating those heels, those villains. I think she really did a great job in doing that. Jimmy Hart could be annoying at times, and obviously as far as that's what he wanted to, especially with his megaphone talking into it or doing that, you know, playing it, you know, as far mm-hmm. as and he could do that as well. So if you want to put Jimmy Hart as on the Mount Rushmore of managers, I won't argue with you, and then move over Sherry as far as the one of the greatest, if not the greatest, of valets. I wouldn't argue that as well. Again, she did so much. She worked. She earned what you were paying her because of the fact she was just so involved in what's going on. She just didn't sit idly by and not get involved or just do a standard, okay, she would stand in front of a heel wrestler or something like that, and that's it. She would do more than that and provide entertainment for the fans because she was, it was almost like you're wrestling, if she like Harlem Heat, it's almost like you're wrestling three people as opposed to two because she was taking so much physicality in the, when she would try to intervene as well.
Well, and I think there's another valet that personally myself, I'm going to say, would be on my Mount Rushmore, but I think this individual, for lack of a better term, trumps Sherry Martel. And I say that's Miss Elizabeth. Miss Elizabeth, to me, is quite frankly the greatest valet, albeit not the prototypical valet. All right. She was not like a Sherry Martel that took bumps. She was not.
I would say Sherry Martel is not the prototypical valet. I would say that Miss Elizabeth is the preeminent type of valet because the valets, for the most part, 90% of them don't get physically involved.
Yeah. So I, okay. Thank you. Thanks for helping me prove my point. But yeah, I think that, you know, she brought something different to the equation of Macho Man Randy Savage, like, because he was the wild man, especially starting off, and then having her be more of the calm, the serene, if you will, type of attitude, where Randy was always balls to the wall, crazy lunatic fringe. And to me, there was not a better duo when you look at manager and valet. I think that, she definitely, she's right up there as my number one, followed by, of course, my second one, I would probably put Sherry Martel as third, but I digress there. We'll talk about my number three here in a minute because I didn't know, Gerald, if you wanted to add in anything about Miss Elizabeth.
Well, I mean, as a popularity, yeah, she's just probably the most popular valet ever as far as it's concerned, you know, even surpassing, or you could argue the late 90s decade success of Sunny and Sable, and obviously, they shot through the moon as far as the early internet age. I get that. I understand that. But over the course of her career, kind of wound down with the WCW run. It kind of got, with Woman also there with Miss Elizabeth, often working together. Or it kind of like her WCW NWO or WCW run was kind of just there. But her WWF work, like you said, she was for many years the preeminent valet of her kind. And I wouldn't argue with that. I just seeing Sherry Martel, where do you put her as a manager, as a valet? Where do you put Sherry as far as that concerned? Because the great contributions she made, it's just that question I would leave it up to you. But one under the radar valet I would probably want to get mentioned. I want to mention before we head on out, and that is Sunshine from the early days of World Class, because of that angle that she did, you know, she, in real life, I believe she's cousins with Jimmy Garvin. But they, you know, they were quite a bit as a valet, and he was a wrestler in the early days of him as gorgeous Jimmy Garvin going up. And then Precious came along as the assistant to Sunshine, which turned into Sunshine getting stabbed in the back, figuratively, of course, by Precious. Precious and Garvin, I believe, are married still to this day, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
And congratulations to them for that. But in order to do that, though, Sunshine in Texas, and also to an extent Mid-South as well, in UWF, got real, real heat and actually interjected herself, even though she didn't have the training, let's say, even like to an extent of a baby doll at that point mm-hmm. in time, who she had a little bit of thing with. But she garnered so much heat in a positive fashion once she turned too good, once she turned face. It really was astounding to see. You look at that era, that 84, 85, 83, 84, 85 era when she really started to get some real popularity out of it, and the physicality that she brought to the, you know, ring, sometimes fighting the other valets, whatnot, for instance, Precious, for instance. Yes, I really want to go ahead and make sure that that's noted as well. For that brief period of time, she was absolutely huge in what she was doing.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't she also paired up with David Von Erich? Because it was those two against Jimmy and Precious, because of the infamous where Precious and Jimmy lost the match. They had to come and be ranch hands on David's
farm. No, it was Chris Adams. I believe it was Chris Adams.
Was it Chris Adams?
Where was it? Was it David Von Erich? You could be right on. It could be right at David Von Erich. Yeah, I think it is David Von Erich.
Yeah, because I think it was then, like 82, 83 when that happened.
Yeah, yeah. And then it was. I think you're correct. And then they had to go and become, yeah, beforehand, before she turned face, she did. She and Jimmy Garvin. Was it her or was it Precious? I think it was Sunshine.
Okay. All right.
I think so. But I'm gonna look it up right now. But yes, I think that, again, yeah, having to go and do that on the ranch, because it is available out there on YouTube. And yeah, just very, very interesting. Again, if you look at the timeline, especially when she got betrayed by Jimmy Garvin and Precious, her heat that she generated, her interest in her crowd support, went through the roof at that time for an 80s territory style. As far as it was the Von Erichs, the Freebirds, and then you could say her right after that period of time for that short window right there.
And then she had successful runs managing Cowboy Scott Casey, the Missing Link. Wasn't she with Kabuki for a while too when he turned heel?
I believe so.
Or face?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So they always had that Beauty and the Beast type of, well, with the exception of Cowboy Casey, not him, but the Missing Link and Kabuki, the you know, the Beauty and the Brawn, or the Beauty and the Beast. They always had that kind of going together as well. If I may, Gerald, while you're looking
it
that
is
up,
Jim, by the way, it is Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine. They were valet for a day.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was going to mention, since we're talking about world class, my number three, and I have her action figure right here. Missy Hyatt, for me, is somebody that belongs on that Mount Rushmore of valets. I think that I appreciated, especially when I kind of got smart to the business, I appreciated the fact that Missy Hyatt kind of pretended to be an heiress to the Hyatt Motel or Hotel organization. And I like that. There's just something about that that made, like, to me, that's magical. Like, that just is a great example. I mean, it does help that her actual name is Hyatt, although it's spelled differently. But she was so snotty. She played the role so well with Hollywood John Tatum. Even when she was with Eddie Gilbert, like, she was so obnoxious. And I think that even she carried over that obnoxiousness, even when she was a babyface, but it was a different style of obnoxiousness, if that makes sense. Like when she was with the Steiners, when she was doing her own stuff with WCW, like in regards to report, backstage reporting and whatnot, like there was still that obnoxious, dare I say, airbrained or not ditzy blonde, but it was done in a way that was not like it was when she was a heel. I always appreciated Missy Hyatt.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that, especially, you know, with Hyatt, Hot Stuff International, what they created during that time in Mid-South and UWF, and again, later on, what she was doing with WCW as well. Yeah, she does definitely does and should get a lot of credit for what she did for the industry. And you have a little story as far as her action figure as well, I think.
Yeah, apparently she had tweeted out that she was waiting to get hers, I believe. And mine came like maybe a little bit earlier, maybe a few hours, maybe a day or so or whatnot. And I had responded to her tweet and took a photo of mine and sent her the photo. And then she liked it and she sent back that she would like to know how I'm going to display the figure, which I don't know how I'm going to do that. I haven't even put any thought into it. But that actually hasn't been the first time she's actually responded to a tweet of mine, because I got her biography, her autobiography that she wrote, many, many years ago. And she responded with it. Like, she said something about, because I posted a picture of the book and said something about, can't wait to read this. And her response was, you should have spent the money on Jim Ross's book. That's which cool. I thought was kind of depreciated. What's the word I'm looking for? Not depreciated.
Disappointing.
No. It was, never mind. Where you make fun of yourself. Deprecating.
Yeah. Self-deprecating.
Self-deprecating humor. That's what I appreciated. So
there you go. Well, she was probably dating Jim Ross at the time. Because she has, they've admitted to come out that I guess they were dating for a period of time not too long ago. So I'll just leave it at that. But our last few minutes talking about the managers and valets, because we've gone over quite a few.
Can I give one more?
Sure, of course.
Okay. And this one is exactly what you said at the beginning of this discussion. This individual, 95% of my allure for this individual, this valet, is based on looks. I just have to be honest. But to me, the fourth slot on my Mount Rushmore valets, Beulah McGillicuddy. She was so pretty on TV, and I ran into her at a mall before an ECW event. And it, look, if her beauty is a 10, in person, it's a 12. Absolutely the most stunning woman I've ever seen in professional wrestling. Granted, now she added to ECW's lore. She certainly did. She was part of a lot of very memorable moments, like getting pile driven by.
Yeah, physicality. She got involved. Yes.
She got involved. That bloodbath with Bill Alfonso. I mean, she got involved, but just to me, she was a favorite of mine because, as I said, just and fantastic. When I met her at that shopping mall before an ECW event, I met her. Her and Tommy Dreamer were just shopping, and I literally like walked out of like the best, not the Best Buy, but the FYE, and there they were. I almost ran into them and told them I was going to the show, and they were very nice and very humble. And yeah, like I said, she in person was stunning, absolutely stunning.
So there you go, absolutely. But I wanted to ask you your thoughts on some of the other longtime managers that have been out there. Gary Hart, the Grand Wizard, I know from back in the 70s and whatnot. No matter what Gary Hart did, because he never really, outside of one small stretch in WCW, never really managed on a national level. So that's why he, you know, for people out there, if they wanted to ask what about Gary Hart, I really couldn't come to my decision on him based off that, because he was always in and around Texas for that, outside of that one stretch in 1989, where he was with World Championship Wrestling for the most part. And little bits here and there. Yeah, just outside of that, just it for me, that just really stands out, four or five individuals for as far as the managing hierarchy. And I just don't think there's just absolutely, for me, a deep chasm between anyone else. Humperdinck, you know, he was more of a regional manager as well. And then when he finally came to WCW or WWF at that time, it just wasn't the same. He didn't provide much of an impact on that. And yeah, I just think that there's a chasm between the top layer and then everyone else.
I'll address those three that you mentioned. Gary Hart, to me, a brilliant booker and a great manager, but as an 8-year-old kid, he was so boring because he wasn't. I mean, he wore slacks and a button-up shirt and a sweater, and I'm like, you look like an accountant. You don't look like a wrestling manager, because I was looking at Jimmy Hart, who was so
JJ Dillon with the Four Horsemen. I mean,
yeah,
what, like, did he really add it? I mean, Flair's doing the promos, Arn's doing the second promo, Tully's doing the third promo, whoever's fourth is doing the fourth promo, and then there's JJ, and it's just like, when you got to JJ, it's like, okay, I'm good.
Thank he you. Was good at ringside, but. Yeah. Again, I agree with you.
Did like, some physicality. Yeah, you say he was okay. It was okay. Yeah. But again, I just you cannot compare his work to Bobby Heenan's, who, or the impact that Cornette or Heyman had as well.
Well, and let's be honest, the worst of the worst, in my opinion, is Paul Jones. Paul Jones brought nothing to the table at all. As Jim Cornette has mentioned many times, it was a favor done for him. And you could clearly see that with his ridiculous tuxedo, or even worse and more offensive, when he was the Hitler mustache and the stupid fatigues. Like, just, he was awful. Like, I liked the Barbarian. I liked some of his people that he had under in his stable. But number one, I couldn't stand him. And number two, there was only so much of Jimmy Boogie Woogie Man Valiant versus Paul Jones's army that I could take, even as a kid. I was like, this again? We're doing this again? I don't know. And to polish off those other couple that you mentioned, I never was a big fan of Oliver Humperdinck. He was okay when he was with Satanic Kevin Sullivan, but other than that, I didn't dig him. And the Grand Wizard, I got to be honest, I don't know much about Ernie Roth. I have to be honest. I know he was very prolific on the prolific on the mic. He talked a good promo.
Yeah, but it was in that age, that era. That's the same thing, the reason why we don't consider the commentators from that time, really, because they have a style in the 70s as far as cutting promos that they didn't do in the 80s and 90s mm-hmm. and 2000s. It's just a different style, and it's also more elaborate, more intricate, you know, since that time. They were very basic promos that they would cut, some of them very good as far as what they, but they're so focused on just certain aspects of that era that they were confined. It just seemed like once the 80s happened and it really started going national, your way of approaching the business in certain aspects just seemed to get broadened, and it left individuals behind, such as the Grand Wizard, such as, you know, you some of these commentators and wrestlers from the 70s as being forgotten, because simply because they were not able or allowed to do what they were able to and allowed to do later on in decades following.
Yeah, and you know, I think maybe too, they were focused in the 70s more about that next show. Like, tell us about what's going to happen at the Philadelphia Spectrum, you know, and talking the people into the building.
Lou Albano too, and to an extent as well.
Freddie Blassie, another one that I was like, I don't know. He was okay. But I definitely agree with you that there's a different, there's a change when it comes to promotion or promos. There's a change in promos. From the 70s to the 80s to even the 90s and now, there's a difference as well. But just some of these folks, I'm trying to think if there's any other outstanding or lackluster managers that maybe we forgot about.
Well, Marlena with Goldust, you know, at that time, the real life wife of Dustin Rhodes, the former Alexandra York, as far as for WCW fans, but I think she was much more effective than WWE. To me, you know, as for a very, you know, attractive woman, to me, as far as where I put her and placed her among the pantheons, I actually thought found her more attractive than Sable or Sunny. But again, you know, she was often just, she was never really getting intermixed with as far as physicality, but, and her promos were mostly still by Goldust as well. She would just be often smoking cigars.
You know, I throw out Dawn Marie. I think she did a really good job in ECW, especially being paired up with Lance Storm. Because as historically noted, Lance Storm, maybe not the best promo, you know. And so having her around helped to kind of hide that fact. And I think she did a great job of playing the ditzy valet that didn't quite know what was going on. And you know what? You mentioned Marlena. I also mentioned this one. I think Miss Linda is underappreciated. Yeah. Of course, the manager valet of Exotic Adrian Street.
And Bill Alfonso with the whistle, Judge Jones there. You know, you could say that at Sheik out on LKC in AWA, and then of course also as well in what World Class. You know, they had their share of managers as well that you could look at. Baby Doll as a valet, she was really as far as popular in the mid '80s. And then, you know, we just cannot just continue to talk about there's been so many. There's been so many that have made an imprint as far as it's concerned. You know, any others that you can mention before we head on out?
Yeah, Gerald, I think we could sit here for 3 hours and talk about managers and valets, to be honest with you, because there have been so many. And you know, when you really think about it, you know, they've all made some sort of impact, whether that's positive or negative. It doesn't matter who we're talking about. I think we both have very solid selections for our Mount Rushmore entries. So, yeah, I can't think of any other individuals to discuss.
Again, I just, that's really what it comes down to is, you know, just so many great names, just so many great names that have come over the years. Just truly, truly cannot thank you enough, John, for going out and sharing your stories on the way out. But any last thoughts, my friend, before we get out of the ring for today's show?
You know what? I'll tell you what. I think that John Orlando guy was pretty bad as a manager, too. So we might want to.
Okay. All right.
I should just I stick to what I do best, ring announcing and play by play. So there you go. I know my lane now. So
Skandor Akbar. That's what I wanted to get into. Well, yeah, I'd like, there's one I'm missing. One I'm not remembering. Skandor Akbar in World Class. You know, again, a great regional manager, but never really transformed from there. Unless you talk about the run with Adnan, KLKC, Sergeant Slaughter, and Iron Sheik, as far as I, but yeah, that's outside of that. Yeah, let's just go on there. We could go on all day, but we're going to get out of the ring now. Once again, support the PVD cast and Matt Talk, and then, of course, the Pop Culture Cosmos. John, it's been great having you on once again. Truly cannot thank you enough for spending some time sharing your thoughts. I'm looking forward to hearing more stories down the road from the road. Right here. But yes, for John Orlando, it is Gerald Glassford. We'll be back near the end of every month talking the state of pro wrestling and, of course, everything that we do in the world of pop culture from the PVD cast, Matt Tuck, and, of course, also as well, the Pop Culture Cosmos on the state of pro wrestling. Ding, ding, ding.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. A few stories from my career in independent pro wrestling in the state of Ohio. And I hope you enjoyed them. And I also hope that you enjoyed the conversation Gerald and I had about the best managers and valets in wrestling history. We really had a fun time making this episode, and so I know there's going to be a few more coming down the pike where the state of pro wrestling will just be about some other topics than what's going on currently in the world of pro wrestling. But hey, you know what? Let me know if you liked what you heard, and you could do that a couple different ways. First, you could shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can also drop me a line over on the Facebook, the Instagram, or the Threads accounts. Just look for @PVDcast. And you can even find me still on Twitter. My Twitter handle is my personal handle. It's @PVDMVP. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about the show. And there's a couple different ways that you can do that. First off, you can tell them about PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode. The PVDcast is also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite outlet or app. In the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while you're there, don't forget to rate and review. It helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. There's still a third way that you can hear every single new episode, and that is through the Facebook page. On Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there you go. You got three different ways you can hear the PVDcast. That is through PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, through the Facebook page. That's @PVDcast. Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you very much for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.